Okay, you're very welcome back to Majority World. You're listening to Near FM 101.6. And the number, if you'd like to give us a shout, is 867-1016, if you'd like to make any comments about the programme as well. Well, my name is Robbie Sinnott, by the way, and I'm talking here today with Joe Murray, who's from AFRI, which is Action from Ireland. And they've got a conference on during the weekend around a festival called La Éile Bríde, and he's going to tell us something about it. So, Joe, what exactly is going on this weekend?
Well, Robbie, this is the 12th annual Féile Bríde Conference in Kildare, which is organised by AFRI and by a group in Kildare called Cairde Bríde. And as I said, it's been happening for 12 years. It's a series of justice and peace issues have been raised. And what started out as an ordinary conference 12 years ago has developed into a Féile festival, which includes music and theatre and really a week of activities that continue after the conference is over. And this year's conference begins on Saturday the 24th and continues through until Sunday at lunchtime on the 25th.
Well, it sounds like a great crack altogether. And is there any sort of meaningful discussion that goes on as well outside the partying?
Oh, there is, there is. What we like to do is combine all the elements and, you know, I think if you see the programme, we have a very interesting mixture of beginning with music. Some people will have heard of Steve Cooney and Leisha Kelly. They're very well-known musicians. So they open the event with a 10-minute slot. Mm-hmm. And then I suppose we get down to more serious business and we have a session on, well, the whole theme of the conference is sources of life, sources of conflict. And we're looking at, you know, resources like oil and water. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, particularly water should be a source of life, but in fact is often and increasingly becoming a reason for conflict in our world. And that opening session has been addressed by a man called Paddy Mackey, who's been an activist around the whole issue of water for many years now and can speak with great authority on that subject.
Is it possible to see oil as a source of death at the moment?
Well, in fact, it is in a lot of cases, particularly, you know, well, Iraq is one example, Afghanistan is another. But I know I recently heard a report about some elderly man in Iraq who lamented the fact that their country had oil and said that they never had been given this resource because it has been a cause of death and conflict and war for so many people in their country. So, yeah, unfortunately, that's how resources are being used or being exploited now.
Isn't it amazing that a non-renewable resource like oil is still relying on it, and there's hardly any investment going into renewable resources, or else the patents are being bought up?
Exactly. Well, this is the point. I think if the political will was there, alternatives would be in use. Not only, I think many of the alternatives have already been found, but the vested interests are very clear, particularly in the Bush administration at the moment. Mm-hmm. The vested interests want to maintain our dependence on oil, and once that happens, you know, large profits will be made by individuals and small groups, and large numbers of people will be victimised in the process.
Okay, so how can we fight for democracy in the meantime? What Paddy Mackey is going to be speaking, but can you give us some idea of what sort of thing he'll be saying and how we can actually do something about this?
Yeah, well, Paddy is a local activist. He's a Tipperary man, and he's been, you know, he said that he got his love of water when he was taken fishing by his father at the age of 12. And he said at that time, when his father brought him swimming, he'd be able to pick up a sixpence off the bottom of the lake. It was that clean. And now, you know, the fish are dying, and you can't see through the pollution that covers the lakes. And that's the case in
far effluent,
throughout Ireland. In my mm-hmm. own part of the country, I come from Longford.
Yeah. Oh, it's terrible there.
Yeah,
the water.
There's a 35,000 unit piggery on my doorstep, and mm-hmm. you can imagine what that's pumping into the environment.
Sure.
You know, so we're looking at this from the local to the national to the international. And, you know, I suppose Paddy, like, you know, people like Tom Hyland is a good example of what individuals and
East Timor, Tom,
can do. Yeah. East Timor, Tom, who will be there as well at the weekend. But, you know, what people can do in terms of taking action in relation to resources like oil and water, particularly hot water.
So you'll have concrete proposals for people that people can actually get together and we can actually do something. It's great that people actually raise the issue as well, and people can have a good time and enjoy bands like Steve Cooney. And but it's great too if people can know exactly that they can do something about it.
Well, that's exactly it, and I think that has been a hallmark of this particular conference, is that we didn't want it ever to be just a talking shop. So it is always focused towards action. It goes on over 2 days, and the second...
So it's called Action from Ireland, is AFRI's name.
That's right, yeah. So we want to live up to our names. And on the Sunday, we have a special session, which is about what can we do. We've heard all these issues being raised. Now, what can we do about them? And that session is particularly geared towards that. And in the past, very good things have come out of it. Like, for example, Ogoni Solidarity Ireland was formed as a result of this conference. Yeah. West Papua Action was launched at it. And the Nice Treaty campaign, the campaign for a no vote, was also launched at the Faila Brigid conference. So there's kind of a track record there of active responses resulting out of the weekend, and we hope that will continue in this year's event.
Are they still active, West Papua and the Ogoni?
The West Papua are right next door to us here in AFRI. They're sharing an office, and they're doing very good things. It might be good for you to chat to them.
I certainly would love to, yeah.
Yeah, so Mark Doris is the man there, and I'm sure he'd be delighted to have a chat with you.
Yeah, it'd be brilliant.
Ogoni is less active now. Things have moved in Nigeria, although there are a lot of problems there.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still some activism going on around.
And again, it brings us back to oil and what Shell is getting up to in Nigeria.
Well, exactly. And I have a very good friend who's working there in the Delta region, and they made an extraordinary film showing, I suppose, the other end of the oil industry. You know, we see the kind of clean petrol stations where we pull in, fill up and pull out. But they're at the other end, where land is contaminated, where water is contaminated, where people are literally dying as a result of the contamination of their environment that results from Shell activity.
That's right. Well, I mean, Shell might be listening. Well, we have to say, in fairness, Shell would claim that they're giving money to the Nigerian government to actually help these areas. But the problem is, they know well that that money is going straight to corrupt causes. Well, they would have to know if they actually strayed outside their plants and went around the local community where they were.
Exactly. Well, I think, they have a responsibility, like all the other, and Shell are not the only one, I should say, there is a list of companies,
but
they have
every
responsibility.
Day.
They are making huge profits out of the resource. Mm-hmm. It's taken out of the lands of other peoples, and they have a responsibility towards those other peoples. And I know this particular man is Donegal man Kevin O'Hara, who's been working in Nigeria for 20 years. He's doing a project whereby he, you know, brings the evidence of the exploitation and the pollution, and he brings it to the boardrooms of the oil companies. He brings it to the shareholders, and he presents that information to them. And I think that's a way that we can lever, that it's a lever of power, that we are the consumers, and we have the ability to choose, and we have the ability to put pressure on companies in that way. And I'm sure these are the kind of issues that will be raised this weekend.
Mm-hmm. There's the two main speakers are Paddy Mackey and Tom Hyland, and who else is going to be there?
Well, Susan George is speaking as well. Now, Susan is she wrote, I suppose, one of the best books I'd say I've ever read. It's a book called How the Other Half Dies, The Real Reasons for World Hunger. And it's a very, influential book that was published back in the mid-80s.
What's her thesis?
Sorry?
What is she saying?
What she's saying is more or less like in the famine in Ireland, that there's a kind of a myth about that people die of hunger because there's no food. But in fact,
absolutely,
what she's showing is people die of hunger because there's a lack of political will to ensure that, that there is plenty of food around, but it's being concentrated in a small area.
Yeah, and lack of distribution. People would not be so surprised at how green Ethiopia was, even in 1984 when the famine was rife.
Yes, exactly. Well, I worked in Sudan in 1989, and I was working with Concern, and the project was to bring seed and small implements out to 1,000 farmers in a particular region, and we did that over a period of 6 months. But what was extraordinary for me was that while driving out to these villages to distribute these seeds, what you were driving past was acres and acres of doura, which is the staple diet of the Sudanese people, acres and acres as far as the eye could see. So you were literally driving through this to bring seed to people, to give them enough food to sustain them in life. But what was happening to that, massive acres of doura that was growing was that it was being harvested and exported to Saudi Arabia and to Europe. So, you know, that's...
So we are culpable, our governments are at least, and the companies who import this. I mean, why would we be wanting to import Dura into Europe when they're short of it in Sudan? It's amazing.
Absolutely, and you know, like, again, it's our own history, you know, when we were dying of hunger here, our food was being exported by the shipload out of the
country. And by Irish, let us say, as well. The rich Irish farmers exporting to England and not caring about anybody.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I think, you know, it's important for us to keep in touch with our own history and to apply the lessons of that history to situations that we see around the world today, you know?
It certainly is, and I think it should be said that there's been recently good news in the south of Sudan, where I think the SPLA have come to some sort of tentative agreement with the government, and it seems as if something could be happening there. But what I was going to ask you as well, AFRI are done particularly well on the weapons issue. Ireland... manufacturing of weapons in Ireland, or components of weapons. And you brought out a report or something quite recently on that, didn't you?
We did. We brought out a report, and we have another one coming out very shortly. And, you know, it's an extraordinary kind of dark side of the Irish economy and, you know, the so-called Celtic Tiger that now no questions are asked about who comes in or what activity to carry out in terms of contributing to this so-called... economic miracle. And you know, what we showed in 1996 was that the arms component sector was there, but it was extremely small. And what we were saying at that stage is, let's stop now before we get more involved in this and before it's more difficult in terms of jobs to get out of it. But of course, the government's reaction on that occasion was to bury their heads under the sand and say, you know, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil, and they did nothing about it. And now, in since that time, we identified 14 companies involved in international arms trade. Amnesty brought out a report last year which showed up to from 50 to 75 companies involved, and you know, increasing numbers of licenses being issued by the Department of Trade and Enterprise to export components throughout the world.
So they do, the government do know what they're at. If the Department of Trade and Industry is issuing the licenses...
That's the extraordinary thing. Yeah. Like, you know, the one department is issuing the licenses and the other is denying that it exists. And I, at a conference in the Royal College of Surgeons, asked David Andrews, when he was Minister for Foreign Affairs, you know, I said, you know, what do you say about this and what do you do about it?
Yeah.
And he took the usual response and said, Ireland has no... indigenous arms trade. Use that word, and that's the word they use. It's as if that makes it okay, because
he would have been the first to take the credit for the East Timor.
That's exactly it. And there was this amazing irony in the fact that you know, and he was extremely good in relation to East Timor, and Tom Highland would always acknowledge that. But on the other hand, he was quite willing to turn a blind eye to the arms industry, and in fact, he was the one who signed Ireland into membership of the Partnership for Peace as well. So.
I think what happens, you see, is out of sight, out of mind, and when people can't actually see, they're not actually making a real gun or anything like that, and even in Britain where that does happen, I think that the problem is making a living out of death, whether you're manufacturing cigarettes or manufacturing arms or bullets or anything like that, it's particularly reprehensible. It's very difficult to...
It is, and actually that's one of the good things about this new report that AFRI is coming out, is that the our researcher has... You know, he has made the link between the components that people make in clinical factory floors and the mayhem that they cause as complete weapon systems when they, you know, are dropped from the sky at 30,000 feet in a village in Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever.
It's computer precision, isn't it?
Exactly.
I mean, I heard something, I think it was from the same report, was it, about the computerization of nuclear testing? So that
that's right, exactly. That's a factory in Galway, which is making the computer, supercomputer it's called, which literally tests nuclear weapons. You know, the extraordinary thing is that not even the Department of Trade and Enterprise knew about this until we brought it to their attention.
Gee.
So I'm sure there's all kinds of things going on.
And did they get punished then because they didn't even get the license from the Department of Trade and Industry?
Isn't that amazing? Not a word was said, you know.
Yeah, isn't that one law for them?
That's it, yeah. And like, we're hearing, and, you know, quite rightly we're hearing about the need for decommissioning and getting weapons out of Irish politics. And
The double standards have been amazing over the years.
That's it.
I remember at the time when the British government used to manufacture landmines, which they don't anymore, and the whole idea of saying, you know, what was terrorism, you know, and the whole, it was bizarre to hear some of the mental gymnastics that
went
on.
Right. Well, I remember a particular night when Mo Mullen was Secretary of State. She was quite a good Secretary of State, I think. But
yeah.
She was literally, the war in Afghanistan was going on. So if there had been she was on question time, and if there had been a backdrop, a screen, it could have shown bombs dropping on Afghanistan. And she was appealing to the paramilitaries in the north of Ireland. She said, come on, you people, give up the weapons. She says, I don't have them to give up. I can't give them up, so you have to give them up.
Why do you think people buy this stuff? Why do you think they buy this message, you know, that we're good and they're bad type thing?
I think, as you say, it has been made respectable, you know, if it's presented in a certain way, and if a certain intelligentsia in the newspapers argue in its favour, which happens, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then the consequences are kept out of sight. Like, you know...
Yeah, like, respect to every sight out of mind principle
that's
again.
It, yeah. Like, we all saw the consequences of Oman. It was horrific. And there's a film we made about it, and it's going to highlight that, and that's great that that's happening. But, you know...
Well, I don't know.
From 30,000 feet in Iraq would have caused, you know, 20 Omas. And,
yeah, it's far more cynical. It's like a computer game, even for the pilot, I suppose.
Yeah. I suppose we can sit back at this distance and say, you know, not on our doorstep, and... it's okay, you know.
Well, can you tell me, before we get back to Kildare again, just tell me briefly about AFRI and who actually set it up and why it was set up. You're going to have to tell me, explaining a lot of the reasons why now, what you've got actually got on, but who are the people responsible? What's, how do you get your funding?
It started in 1975, which, you know, next year it'll be 30 years, believe it or not. But it was a Salesian missionary who worked in India for 39 years himself, and then he was posted back to Ireland, and he was, even at that stage in 1975, he was aware of the contrast in standards of life between Ireland and India. So he set up this little organisation to literally to raise money in Ireland and send it out to India. That's why it was set up in the first place. And it continued like that for 5 years, but then we began to, Don Mullen and myself joined in 1980, and we began to say, well, how come all this aid is going out from AFRI and Trocar and Concern and other organisations around the world, and the situation is not getting better, in fact it's getting worse, so what's the problem? So we began to look at the causes, and, you know, we identified a number of causes, like the international debt crisis, like the neoliberal economic system and the arms trade. And, you know, we've focused on different elements of those causes over the years, and at the moment our focus is on the arms trade. And,
I'd like to ask you far more about this, but we've actually got to wind it up at the moment. But can I ask you finally about Kildare? How do people, where exactly do they go again, and what day and what time does it start?
They go to Kildare Town to the De La Salle College, which is almost in the centre of town. If you get to the centre of Kildare Town, anyone will know where it is. It begins at 10:30 on Saturday morning, the 24th, this Saturday, and you can either ring us here in the office at 8827563, or you can just turn up on the day and we'll be delighted to...
8827563 is the number in the office. Probably get rid of, I'm sure, loads of trains going there, or bus, and if you've got a car...
It's a very regular train service. The Arrow goes down there, so it's a very regular service.
Or you can drive down. Whatever. No, what I was wanting to ask you briefly, because we have about 30 seconds or something about that, it's just the whole idea of charity. People wonder, who gets the money? You know, like, that's the whole thing about Trocar or Concern, because I got this feeling during the Ethiopian famine, for instance, that we were giving money to somebody to shipping companies, for instance, like that. And we were buying food, which wasn't resolving the actual causes of the problem.
Yeah, well, I suppose our position on that is, you know, that the most, and people from developing countries have said this,
I'm sorry again. No, I got the thing mixed up time wise here. We can talk again. Okay. Thank you very much, Joe Murray. Thanks very much for speaking to us again. I'm sorry for interrupting you again.
No,
and
let's
hope I'll try to speak to you again. Okay.
Thank
you very much. Okay. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
I got mixed up.